Hutchinson's books, used and rare, was painted on the window in fading gold. But Saul and I had parked four blocks away and slid up to the back door under a punishing wave of sun and heat. Mid-morning, and it was already a scorcher. The shadows teemed with shapes, far darker than morning shadows had a right to be. I was sure I kept seeing the little glimmers of colorless crystal eyes. If Saul noticed too, he didn't mention it. Whether he was magnanimously refusing to comment, or he didn't sense them, was an open question.
I'm willing to bet on the former.
Gilberto had been dropped off at Galena's, wide-eyed and with a fresh cast on his arm. Galena, bless her, didn't ask a goddamn question. Just took one look at my face and clucked and cooed over the gangbanger, promising to get him into fresh clothes and get some healing sorcery on that arm. Technically, I suppose I should have charmed the bone before we left the warehouse, but I had other things on my mind. The whole time, Gilberto clutched Jack Karma's knife. I didn't ask him to let go of it. I guess that answered that question.
I have a new apprentice, to add to all of my other problems.
I blinked the exhaustion out of my eyes and touched the doorknob to the shop. A thin thread of sorcerous energy slid off my fingertips, stroking the locks I'd built. Paper, dust, and air conditioning closed around us as I swept Hutch's small reading room. It was lined with bookshelves, and even the dust in here vibrated with secrecy. Ordinary people wouldn't even see the door we'd just ducked through. Though precious few people came in here, this place was kept afloat because of the Hunter's Library. Hutch got a stipend and dispensation for when he occasionally went breaking a few electronic surveillance laws in service to whatever case I was working on at the time. I got a research library and an extra pair of eyes to go digging through dusty tomes whenever the end of the world drew too nigh.
Jill, that kid...
He's got the look.
Great. Another person to get a slice of your time.
Is that what this is about?
I checked the shop as well. Books sat quietly on their shelves, leather-bound tomes stacked on chairs and on Hutch's massive mahogany desk, shipwrecked in a sea of papers. A PC that hadn't been there last time crouched on one corner of the desk, a ship-shaped new Mac on the other corner. The two laptops were in their traveling cases, tucked out of sight under the desk. Pity he hadn't taken his phone. The whole point of his vacation was to get him out and away from temptation, the little monster. The deal was, he hacked only when the local hunter needed him to, and the local hunter kept his ass out of jail. Unfortunately, sometimes Hutch just couldn't help himself. He's small and beaky and a cowardly lion. But a challenge in cyberspace? Suddenly he's Superman, 6 feet tall and bulletproof, and completely without any goddamn self-control at all. I had to wait until things calmed down, and the local FBI liaison, Ron Ruhio, finished smoothing the ruffled feathers before Hutch could come back.
Hey, what do you mean, is that what this is all about?
You, and whatever it is you're sitting on.
I'm not sitting on anything.
Yeah, that's why you can't touch me anymore. That's why you flinch whenever I get a little frisky. Okay? When you want to talk about it, let me know.
You never have time.
You're kidding, right, Saul?
Do I sound like I'm kidding? Work comes first, I know. I just have to talk to you sometime.
So talk to me!
I pushed aside the conference table. A big wooden thing, suspiciously clean and neat now that Hutch was out of town, and I hadn't been bothering him to look things up for me. Saul bent down and lent his strength, even though I was already handling it. We pressed it up against one of the overloaded bookcases. I snagged the loop of denim sewn into the carpet and yanked up the cutout square. The concrete underneath was smooth and featureless, its expanse broken only by a recessed iron ring. I stood, grabbed the ring, and set my legs. A hellbreed strong right fist helps when you have to lift a concrete slab. I keyed the code into the climate control pad and slid the glass panel aside. There's a few items Galena keeps for me. I learned my lesson when that Sorrow's bitch stole Mikhail's talisman and rifled all his personal stuff. The papers are here. All the salvageable vitals on the hunters of my lineage, down from the first and second Jack Karmas. Before the first Jack, we don't know anything. This isn't the kind of career that lends itself to leaving evidence in the historical record. The day world, the real world, doesn't want to know. Hunters sometimes rely on sheer outrageousness to slide by unnoticed. A regular civilian's reaction to a genuine paranormal event is usually screaming and running in the other direction. Emerson Sloan's files were very thin. The big Santa Luz fire of 1938 had eaten most of the records he'd left, one way or another. A bare triple handful of manila folders labeled in a round Palmer script, some with notes in Mikhail's broad, firm hand with its Cyrillic notations followed by English translations. I flipped through them. About 20 had no connection to anything remotely resembling the current clusterfuck we were looking at. Another 13 looked promising. I opened the first file, scanned it. No connection. The second, too. I gave my pager a cursory glance. It was the Badger.
Maybe she has something for me.
Jill. Do you still want me?
Of course I do. I always have. What the fuck?
My family's gone. My mother's dead. Billy Ironside killed my sister. My mother's sisters are... Well, I'm not theirs. They have their own cubs. If I didn't have a mate, it'd be different, but...
But there's me. And I'm not aware.
There it was. Half the dysfunction in our relationship laid out in plain words. The other half didn't need to be spoken. I'm tainted. I've got a hellbreed mark on my wrist and a serious rage problem.
I'm not a nice person. I'm not even a good person. I'm a hunter. End of story.
I don't care what you are. You need me, Jill. You'd kill yourself over this if someone wasn't reminding you.
Reminding me of what?
Reminding you that you're worth a damn.
The third file fell open under my numb fingers. I blinked back hot water and what felt like rocks in my eyes. Suddenly, the little tingle of intuition ran up my arms and exploded under my breastbone. A puzzle piece fell into place with a mental click so loud I was surprised it didn't knock over a few books.
Holy shit.
There, clipped to the inside of a folder probably older than I was, a singed, faded black and white photo glared at me. Saul leaned forward, but I kept staring.
The jaw's the same. So's the blonde hair, the sculpted lips, and the straight, thick eyebrows. And the glint of gold around the teeth. And the bad skin. But underneath that...
All this time, I'd thought she was just an ugly woman. Funny how beauty mutates according to expectation.
Huh. Is it Zamba's brother?
I think it's Zamba.
Move your hand. It says something at the bottom.
Arthur Gregory. Missing. Presumed dead.
I flipped the file closed.
Jesus.
She didn't smell male.
It can't just be a coincidence. Right under my goddamn nose all the goddamn time. I hate that.
I looked up. Saul just stood there, a line between his dark eyebrows staring at me. The urgency of a case heating up bit me sharply, right in the conscience.
Goddamn it, can't this wait?
No, it couldn't. I braced myself and met the problem head on.
Don't worry about me, Saul. I did this job before you came along. If you're aching to get back to the res, you can go. I wouldn't hold it against you. God knows nobody else has ever been able to fucking put up with me.
Do you want me to go? What did I do?
You? You didn't do anything, goddammit. If you're trying to figure out how to gracefully get rid of me, Saul, don't worry about it. It's okay.
Jill, I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. Look, I know something's wrong. It's been wrong ever since you came back. I'm sorry. I should have known it was too good to be true.
What the fuck are you talking about?
You don't have to make any excuses to me. No promises, no deals, no bargains. You said that the very first night. If you can't stand me anymore, it's okay. I expected it. Why don't you go and find a nice tabby and raise a litter or three? God knows you're domestic enough.
Jesus, Jill! Are you insane?
Holy hell and hallelujah.
I closed my eyes. the massive mental effort needed to think clearly dragging at every inch of my body. The shaking had me in its jaws and wouldn't let go.
Screw the pager, I have to think. Zamba, Arthur Gregory, some kind of beef with the Cirque. And his brother? Who knows? He found a bargain somewhere, probably voodoo, and the twins. They specialize in androgyny. Oh, it would make sense. It would make a whole lot of sense. He went to Lorelei. Lorelei brokered a deal. Now that the Cirque is back, Lorelei was a liability, and her death would serve as fuel and payment for the Loa, too, as well as the deaths of Zamba's inner circle. The possessions could be aftershocks, or some other part of Zamba's plan. And once the possessed had died inside their violated bodies, they were easy meat for reanimation. And again, payment for the Loa. Zamba was mortgaging herself to the hilt for this, whatever it was. Revenge? Probably.
There were things I had to do. I opened my eyes, found I was staring at the ceiling, and my goddamn eyes had fucking flooded. I couldn't blame it on the dust in the air. Everything shimmered as I blinked, trying to get them to reabsorb the water.
I'm not crazy, Saul. I'm just saying, if you can't bring yourself to touch me anymore, something's obviously very wrong. You're torn up over your mother, I know. I understand. But don't kill yourself staying with me because you think you have to. If you have to cut me loose and go back to the Rez, if this isn't what you need or want, you're free as a fucking bird. I can't keep you, Saul. I won't keep you.
Saul stared at me as if I had indeed lost my mind. His mouth opened, then closed. I clutched the file to my chest like a schoolgirl with her books.
I've got to go. I've got to figure the rest of this out. Any moment now, it could blow sky high.
Jill.
If he's going to tell me that he wants to go back to the Rez, I'm going to start screaming.
But I couldn't afford to lose it now. People were counting on me. A whole city full of them.
My people. In my city. Save it! Do what you're gonna do, Saul. If you're gonna leave me in the dust, make it quick and clean. If you ever loved me, do it that way. Don't drag it out.
Every string in my body ached to stop and touch him, throw my arms around him, and maybe engage in some undignified begging.
Screw the entire city. Screw everything. I don't care as long as he stays with me. As long as there's a chance.
But. One teensy tiny little but.
I'm a hunter. It's that simple.
If Zamba Arthur, or whoever it was, kept killing Cirque performers, things were going to get sticky. There's very little a really motivated voodoo queen can't do to you. And she'd already hit the hostage, too. Perry was there, but if she found some way past him, or if he decided it was too much trouble and some chaos served his ends, well, it would be party time for the entire Cirque, and I'd have Perry and a renegade fucking voodoo queen to deal with.
Big fun.
It meant a lot of innocent people dead or maimed. It meant Hellbreed thinking they could slip the leash and make trouble in my town. It meant years of steady work keeping things under control wasted.
It means more victims.
And there was no fucking way I was gonna stand for that.
No matter what I stand to lose.
I picked up Hutch's phone.
Badger.
Badger, it's Jill.
Jill! It was a job and a half to find out who holds title to that goddamn house.
In what way?
I had to go rousting. It wasn't in the usual databases. I had to go down to the tax assessor's office. They sent me to some goddamn basement. Had to pull records from 1930. Can you believe that? They haven't got around to putting that slice of the city in the databases, he said. Weird, since every other district is.
And the winner is?
Someone named Ruth Gregory? Utilities, phone, garbage pickup, all under the same name. There were bills in the house. But there's some other weirdness. Ruth Gregory doesn't exist.
If she gets bills, she must exist.
Well, that's the thing. None of her information's anywhere we can find it. No DOB, no nothing. But she got bills and paid them. Has a bank account, but if it wasn't for paper statements, we wouldn't know. Her bank doesn't have her on electronic file. There's not even a listing in the phone book. This woman just came out of nowhere, and she doesn't show up in the databases.
That's voodoo for you. The electronic stuff is easier for the Loa to affect than paper. Damn it. Ruth Gregory. What's her middle initial?
Ruth R. Gregory. Why?
Ruth R. Palindrome. Arthur. A little fuck you from Mama Zamba. Oh, just like a supervillain. I don't suppose you found any hints of other houses.
I ran a check. Guess how many Ruth Gregorys there are in the good old United States?
Thousands?
Less than 400. Four in our state. None with the middle initial R. And no hint of a separate identity. Though it's a good bet that if she had one, we wouldn't be able to find it electronically either. It would take us weeks of sifting paper.
No time. Just let me know if any scrap of another identity comes up from processing the house. Otherwise, keep identifying those stiffs, okay?
All right.
Good work, Badger. Did you get everything you needed out of the house?
Boxes of paper. She's a real pack rat, our Miss Gregory. We left everything not needed for forensics there and closed it up. Should we go back?
No, God, no. Stay away from there. Just keep processing that paper and buzz me if anything else tingles your weirdo meter, okay?
You got it.
Any ID on the other bodies yet, other than Trevor Watson? At least the zombies that weren't Zamba's followers?
Not yet. They're pretty spludgy.
Well, that's one word for it. Okay, thanks. I considered screaming and shooting something. Prioritize, Jill. Get your head straight. Come on, what are you gonna do next?
There was only one thing to do. And it wasn't going by the Cirque, thank God. Or standing around yelling at Saul. I looked up, but the bookshop was deserted. Nothing but empty aisles faced with stuffed full bookshelves, boxes on the floor. The antique cash register sitting stolidly, gathering dust.
Saul?
I stood there, my heart twisting itself like a contortionist inside my chest.
Saul? Oh, fuck, he's gone. I didn't even hear him leave. Oh, God.
I swallowed something hot and nasty and paced across the room towards the door. Blinked several times. My cheeks were wet.
This is one less thing for you to worry about. Get back up on the horse, Jill. Do your job.
It was time for me to visit Melendez. If Zamba was the reigning voodoo queen, Melendez was the court jester. Oh, don't get me wrong. Anyone who bargains with an inhuman intelligence is suspect. And just because I hadn't heard of Melendez doing anything even faintly homicidal or icky didn't mean he didn't dabble. But it didn't mean the little butterball was harmless either. Any more than the mark on my wrist meant I was a traitor. Only I was, if you thought about it a certain way. And while Melendez didn't go in for the theatrical horror and power game Zamba did, he also didn't go out of his way to make things easier on people. Live and let die. That was probably the closest thing to a motto he would ever have. Saul had left me the car. Awful nice of him. I told the sharp, spearing ache in my heart to go away as I carved through mid-morning traffic. The shadows leapt and cavorted in my peripheral vision until I began ignoring them, even the colorless crystal eyes and the glass-twinkled teeth. I caught the flow of traffic like a pinball down a greased slide, all the way across town to the northern fringe of the Riverhurst section. A nice address, all things considered, clinging to rich respectability like cactus clings to any breath of moisture. The houses are old, full of creaks, fake adobes, and some improbable Cape Cods. Melendez didn't hold his gatherings in his home. He owned a storefront on the edge of the barrio, with a trim white sign out front announcing the Holy Church of St. Barbara, nonprofit and legitimate under a 501c3. His own private little joke, I guess. 7 nights a week, you can find drumming, dancing, and weird shit happening on the little strip of concrete that had pretensions of being Parareos Avenue. Mornings, though, he could be found here. It's a good thing the streets are wide, even on the edge of Riverhurst, because his followers usually come out for consultations, filling up his driveway and the street for a block or two. Quarter-hour increments. Donations optional. Nobody leaves without paying something. And results guaranteed. Today, though, the street was clear, and I parked right near the front door. Melendez's faux adobe hacienda sat behind its round concrete driveway with the brick bank in the middle, holding still-blooming rose bushes, a monkey puzzle tree, and a bank of silvery green rue. Lemon balm tried its best to choke everything else in the bed, but aggressive pruning had turned it into a bank of sweetness. I was relieved to see his tiny garden was tip-top. The fountain, a cute little chubby-cheeked cherub shooting water from its tiny wang, was going full bore. I wondered if there was a homeowners association in this part of town, and what they thought of his choice in lawn decorations. Not that there was much to speak of. The largest of his lot was out back with the pool. The heat was oppressive. A bowl of haze lying over the city. A brown smudge of smog touched downtown's skyscrapers, and high white horsetail clouds lingered over the mountains. I couldn't wait for the autumn rains to move up the river and flash flood us, just for a change of pace. Hunters are largely immune to temperature differentials. It's right up there with the silence, one of the first things an apprentice learns. I winced at the thought of apprentices as I moved towards the house, sizing up the place. My smart eye caught nothing but the usual stirrings and flickers. An active, febrile, etheric petri dish. I wondered if I was his first visitor of the day.
No time like the present to find out.
The wrought iron gate was open, as usual. The courtyard was just as lush as it ever was, smelling of mineral hose water and the sweet orange tang of Florida water. The splashes across the threshold, where the concrete stopped and the red brick paving began, were still wet.
Well, Melendez, you've been keeping your house neat and clean, haven't you?
I stepped over the barrier, a brief tingle passing over my body. The silver in my hair sparked and chimed. I wanted to touch a gun butt, kept my fingers away with an effort. He had a fountain in the middle of the courtyard, too, a big seashell with a spire rising from the middle of it. It was bone dry. Masses of feverfew, more rue, a bank of bindweed, and the red-painted front door open just a crack. Goose flesh rose hard and cold on my arms and legs. I wished Saul was behind me. Right now, he was probably back at the warehouse, packing. Or maybe he'd already blown town. He traveled light, sometimes just a duffel, most times not even that.
Focus, Jill.
I wanted to kick the door open and sweep the house. Instead, I decided to go the low-key route.
Okay, low-key route number two. Hello, Melendez? Señor Melendez, una clienta para usted.
The entryway was red tile, full of cool quiet and the smell of incense. Lots of incense, in thick blue veils. My blue eyes smarted, filling with hot water. My hand leapt for the gun.
Hola, bruja. Come in. Been expecting you.
I moved my hand away, leaving my pistol holstered. Melendez stood in the foyer. I followed him into the sitting room that abutted it.
Please, sit.
He lowered himself down in a straight-backed leather armchair behind a massive oak desk, cluttered with paper and tchotchkes. He called this room his study, and it was full of bookshelves holding leather-bound books. Nothing Hutch would get excited over. These were just for decoration. And other more useful tools of his trade. An empty fireplace, clean as a whistle, seemed just a set piece for the crossed rapiers hung over it. Both fine examples of Toledo steel, and worth more than the house itself, and probably the neighbors' houses as well. I surveyed the choices available. a padded footstool that would put me below him, literally, like I was a third grader, an overstuffed armchair that would swallow everything up to your neck, a penitence chair made of iron with a faded red horsehair cushion. I elected to remain standing, and Melendez's broad brown face split in a yellow-toothed grin. He settled his ample ass deeper in his chair, his pot belly brushing the desk's edge.
Been a while.
No murders traced any of your followers lately.
You hear about Ruth?
Well, there's either a very lucky guess or he knows something. Guess which? I'm here about Arthur Gregory and the Cirque de Charnoux.
You here because Mama Zamba is calling in all her favors. She got an old feud against the devils, older than yours.
Melendez steepled his long, chubby brown fingers in a blue chambray shirt and jeans, a red kerchief tied around his straight black hair. He was in that ageless space between 29 and 40, if you went by his round, strangely unlined face. It was only the way he moved, with a little betraying stiffness every once in a while, and the distance in his gaze that gave him away. The Loa can hold off age just like a trader's bargain can. They can't grant immortality, but it gets awful close.
If she keeps killing Cirque performers, there's gonna be trouble. I don't have a lot of time to dance around, Melendez. What do you know?
Bruja, you need a better question. You gonna expect answers from me.
Melendez, I got a city that could explode at any moment, and a voodoo queen looking to cause a lot of trouble. You fuck around with me, and I might just decide to look a little too hard at the sweet little deal you got going for yourself. Besides, with Zamba out of the picture soon, you're looking at being the reigning king of the scene around here. If, that is, she doesn't show up and do you like she did the bitch of Greenlee. It didn't seem like Lorelei had an easy death.
Ah, Lorelei. She was Zamba's godmother. Seems like Zamba cleaning up loose ends.
Are you a loose end?
I belong to Chango. The twins, they have no hold on me. My patron, he whipped their asses if they come near me. I'm in strong with Chango. And you got some help too. Ogun just waiting for you to come around.
I didn't think you had any truck with Ogun.
The spirits come when they will. You know, you called on them in the beginning of this. Papa Legba and Ogun both watching you.
Luckily, training in dealing with possession has to take these sorts of things into account. I suppressed a shiver. The first time I'd brushed up against voodoo was during a ceremony devoted to Ogun. Mikael by my side. There was a skip, like a needle lifting from a record. And the next thing I knew, I had a mouthful of fiery rum. Mikael watching me very carefully. And the followers were drifting away toward the dinner table. He never would tell me what exactly I'd done when the drums lifted me out of myself. Broken glass had littered the floor of the peristyle, and there were curls of cigar smoke in the air. It had taken me a while to wash the smell of cigars away. After that, Mikael was very, very careful to teach me how to build an exorcist's hard, etheric shell. I'd never had that problem again, thank God. But still, you never can tell when dealing with shit like this. I fished the two Ziploc bags out of my coat, straight razor and enamelware cup, both of them almost quivering with readiness. I laid them on the desk in front of Melendez.
What do these have to do with Zamba?
Ay, Dimi.
Are we gonna start talking, or are you gonna try yanking me around some more? Because I have to tell you, Senor, my temper's getting a little thin.
Melendez was still staring at my hands, his eyes unfocused, brown irises sheened over as if with cataracts. A thin gray film spilling over his gaze. The air tightened, and I braced myself.
Here we go.
Ay, mi sobrina. Bienvenidos a mi casa.
My hair stirred, the silver chime shifting, and my blue eye caught little dark shapes moving through the charged, heavy atmosphere that had suddenly settled inside the study. I could smell ozone and rum. And cigar smoke, drifting across my sensitive nose. My eyes stung, smart and dumb alike.
Buenos dias, senor. Muchas gracias por su atención.
Hey, it never hurts to be polite.
Melendez's face worked itself like rubber, compressing and stretching. His mouth worked wetly.
You come here seeking knowledge, eh? What you give to Baba Django?
How about I don't rip you out of your follower here? How about I leave this place standing instead of burned down as a lesson in not fucking with me?
You wouldn't ask me if you didn't have something in mind already.
Es verdad. Me and the twins, we have a wager. They think the little puta is a match for the devils and for you. She paid him well. She always have.
I'll bet she does. There's all sorts of debt lately she's been paying them with.
Payment isn't everything. There's more at stake here than just revenge. What does Arthur Gregory want?
I tell you what, Brua.
Me here. He tell you all he know. In return, you owe me una bala. He lie, or he tell you nothing useful, and you put that bala through his cabeza, eh?
Why should I strike a bargain with you?
Because otherwise, me, Sobrina, you ain't never gonna find that tick dug itself into the city's skin. She gonna bloat up with blood and strike the one she aiming for. And you can't let that happen, can you? No. And this little caballo of mine, no, not just the who, but the why. That what you wanting. You just like every other macizo. You always saying por qué, por qué. So, what you say, Brua Grande de Santa Luz? Una bala, por la razón, for the great por qué.
Jesus Christ. It always comes to this, doesn't it? What part of myself am I willing to mortgage to get this case over and dealt with?
Deal. But if you double-deal me, senor, this caballo is worm food, and you're on the outs within the borders of my city.
It was a good threat. I couldn't bar Aloha from the city, of course, but I could make it hell on his followers. Melendez's face lit up with a demonic grin.
We like you, Bruja! Mi hermano Ogun and me, we got a wager on you too. We be watching.
Melendez sagged in his chair. A long jet of smoke sputtered through his lips. Suddenly, his eyes rolled up in his head and he toppled forward. His face hit the desktop.
Ouch. If this turns into a case of spontaneous combustion, we're gonna have a problem.
When Melendez's bloodshot eyes swiveled up and he pushed himself upright, I sank my weight into my back foot, prepared to go any direction.
Kismet.
Melendez.
I need a beer. Then I tell you todo.
Sounds good. Does Chango smoke every time he rides you?
Chinga. Oh, only when he mad, Bruja. Only when he really fucking mad.
I left his quiet house a half hour later. I paused on his walkway and looked back at the courtyard and the dry fountain. I was cold. Not even the white-yellow eye of the sun could warm me. It was the damnedest thing. But the Cirque's dogs didn't come up Melendez's driveway. Instead, they clustered up and down the street, each piece of knife-edged morning shadow full of writhing slender shapes and winking, colorless, glowing eyes. I walked to the Pontiac. I stared down at the Pontiac's steering wheel. Tendons stood out on the back of my scrawny hands, calloused from fighting and sparring. Capable, work-roughened hands. I worked out what came next.
The Cirque. Get out there and take a look at the newest body. Chances are you'll be able to triangulate her position from the traces, now that you know what she's doing and how they're linked. If you can get to her before she gets what she wants...
But there was another consideration. If Mama Zamba, born Arthur Gregory, was out for vengeance against the Cirque, she had a right. Sloane had been working the case, which meant it fell to me to tie up loose ends and finish the job.
Helene took the brother in, and the fortune teller, Morag, had something to do with it. The ringmaster, too. That's who Zamba blames, at least.
It was reasonable, as far as I could see.
But what about Icaros? Why does she want to kill the hostage?
I reached over and grabbed Sloane's file from the passenger seat. Saul should have been there with me. He would be looking at me right now. His head tilted slightly. And his eyes, soft and deep. The pain hit me then. Gully-wide, sideways. I blinked back the tears, rising hot and vicious.
No! Shut up! Shut up and take it! Focus, Jill!
Oh, God damn it.
It was Perry, again. Which could only mean trouble. I flipped the file open. My eyes slid past the picture of Arthur Gregory's young, heartbreaking smile to the précis of the case. Brother disappeared. Last known contact was outside the Carnaval de l'Azalette. Suspects: Helene, hellbreed of the lesser type. Morag, hellbreed of the higher type, refused to give information when questioned. Henri de Zamba, hellbreed of the higher type, also refused to give information.
Holy shit!
There it was. Arthur Gregory's gauntlet thrown down.
Zamba! I'll be damned.
Another piece of the puzzle fell into place, clicking hard.
Maybe she wasn't trying to kill the hostage after all. Maybe she's been after the ringmaster all this time. And it's just echoing through the blood bond since the traitor would be his weak point.
Jesus.
I slapped the file closed, dropping it on the passenger side floorboard.
Come on, Jill, get this done. And you can rest.
The cars in the lot outside the Cirque were hooded with dust, the paint already looking weary and sucked dry. There were a lot of them, and the empty spots looked like knocked-out teeth. It was barely noon and things were going full bore. The reek of cotton candy, animal shit, and fried fat painted the heavy, motionless air. I checked the sky. Over the mountains hung a dark smudge.
Rain, finally.
Which would mean flash floods and misery. Wet boots and cold hanging out on the rooftops. Steaming mornings and dripping against every surface.
It also means old-fashioned hot chocolate, chili, and Saul's signature hash browns.
I pushed the thought away. There were only two or three shufflers outside the ticket booth. The same trader was on duty. Her rhinestones sending back a vicious glitter. Sweat sheen, greasing her pale skin as she kept as far as she could in the shade. I didn't pause. Just strode straight past and jumped the turnstile.
Hey! Get back here, you!
During the day, the Cirque looked shabby. Holes and signs, tawdry glitter. Most of the booths deserted.
Where is everyone?
I was cold. Despite it being in the high 90s under the sun's assault, the alien sense of the Cirque swallowed me, teased at the inside of my skull. It was a few degrees cooler inside the Cirque's borders, but not enough to be a relief. Just enough to pull out some humidity and make every surface cloying and sweaty. I sensed the shadow dogs, spun on my steel-shod heel. They crowded close. One slid a smoky paw out into the fall of sunlight. He snatched it back. An angular curl of dust rose and dissipated on a breeze I didn't feel.
Something is very wrong here.
Ma senti non amore!
Suddenly, a swarm of breed and traders descended on me. My hands filled with the whip and the 45. Then the dogs boiled out of the shadows, sizzling in the flat white glare of sunlight. The dogs clustered, bleeding, gushing gray smoke, their unskin bubbling. One crouched and sprang, hitting a traitor. The traitor, long, skinny, walnut skin cluster with tufts of hair, went down, bleeding bright red, tainted with black. The approaching Hellbreed and traitors flinched, wild-eyed. The dogs pressed closer, seeming not to notice the roasting on their surfaces. Blisters popped and oozed, and little black specks crawled over them.
This is a serious what-the-fuck moment, even for me.
The trader and breed performers in the vicinity left as much clearance as they could between themselves and the dogs. I spotted the skinny plague dealer I'd seen at the entrance to the Big Top over the shoulder of one of the dogs. His knees were obscenely splayed under burlap breeches. His antique top hat was stove in, and his eyes glittered madly, dripping hellfire. Daylight scored each flaw in their beauty, burned it deep, and put the twisting on display. The traitors were caught between the desire to fling themselves at me and to avoid being smashed by the hounds.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph. I didn't know I was so attractive to them. I wonder if it's my perfume.
Ah!
The scar blazed with sudden acid fire, pulling on every nerve in my right arm. And every single humanoid form circling me, traitor or breed, fell face first. He picked his way through them, a tight-drawn mouth. The air peaked behind him in two turbulent whirls, and the breeze turned clotted, full of spoiled honey and dry sand. The whites of his eyes ran with trails and vain traceries of indigo. His white blonde hair was standing up in soft spikes.
Perry looks pissed.
The shadow dogs cringed, the blisters on their hides smoking furiously. My .45 zeroed in on Perry.
That's close enough, Perry.
Oh, not nearly. Here is better. No. Wait. Actually, here.
Come on, Hellspawn. Test my patience.
Now. It seems I did well in ensuring your life.
He made a graceful sketch of motion, indicating the dogs.
Don't break your arm patting yourself on the back.
The last time I'd seen Perry in sunlight, he'd looked almost transparent and extraordinarily unhappy. Right now, he just looked furious, his eyebrows drawn together and dust swirling in two high-peaked points behind him. Glancing around at the pack of unpleasant characters around me, I had the sudden, not unwelcome thought that if I could just keep all of them in the sunlight long enough, they might all implode like vampires in a bad B-movie and save me a lot of trouble. Sunlight is deadly to a lot of things, but it looked merely uncomfortable to Perry. What the fuck is going on here, Pericles?
Oh, my dear. Didn't you receive my messages?
I've been a bit busy chasing down whoever has such a hard-on for the Cirque performers since I last talked to you.
You mean you haven't heard? My darling Kiss! The hostage was attacked again and lies near death!
Oh, shit. And here I thought they were pissed because I didn't pay for a ticket. I'll get to that in a minute. What about Moreg?
She is dead, eaten by the same monster. What more can concern you about her?
I should take a look at whatever's left of her body, Pericles. And if you're a really good little Hellspawn, I'll tell you who killed her. I swear to God, he looked disappointed.
Perry eyed me for a long few moments, his fingers dangling at his sides.
Are there likely to be more deaths?
Of course there are. Unless you get off your hellbreed ass and start helping me control the situation, instead of trying to play it like a harmonica.
It would be very upsetting to be second fiddle to the ringmaster in my town, wouldn't it?
Do you know what is causing this?
I haven't just been sitting on my fucking thumbs, Perry.
Then tell me, my dearest one. Tell me who is responsible for this. I will kill him and we will all be happy.
No, Perry. I'm not telling you a goddamn thing. We're playing this my way. Because if you got your claws into this, the next thing I know, I'd be yanked into going to the Monday again every month.
I lowered the gun, my arm burning with the urge to shoot him in the head and start killing again. Nah, it'd be bad in the long term. But oh, the instant gratification is tempting. Tension ticked tighter and tighter between us like a power line. I kept staring at the bridge of his nose, breathing evenly. My pulse was a steady river.
Playing this your way? Oh, very well. I warn you, though.
Save the threats, Pericles. I need to see the fortune teller's body. or whatever's left of it. And you need to be keeping both Baby Blues on that goddamn hostage. If he dies, you're the first Hellbreed I'm killing. The tent was hung with red velvet, cheap tin spangles, and a huge, ugly stink. Black liquid was splashed on every surface, including the cracked slivers of a crystal ball on a small circular table draped with purple sateen. The slice of hot daylight from the pulled-aside front flap didn't do much to dispel the gloom. I had an unsettling notion that this was the Hellbreed that had snarled at me on my first visit to the Cirque, but not enough of her was left to be sure. It was still cold. Perry crowded behind me until I stepped away, not liking the faint touch of his breath on my hair. The ruby at my throat spat a single bloody spark, warning him off. Why aren't you watching the hostage, Pericles?
Oh, I'd like it much better here with you.
Go, Perry. Have them bring me a bottle of barbancourt rum and some cornmeal.
You came unprepared.
I didn't have time to stop at a botanica. Perry skipped nimbly aside as I turned, avoiding both the sword of daylight through the flap and a streak of decaying Hellbreed tissue. Fine white dust curled up, cringed away from the shine of his shoes. Well? You gonna stand here running your fucking mouth, or you gonna go do what I tell you?
Where's your little kitty, my dear? Home lapping a bowl of cream?
Saul isn't your concern, Perry. Your concern right now is keeping that hostage breathing long enough for me to put an end to this.
And afterward?
Afterward? You can go fuck yourself again. It'll reach. We'll deal with after. Hurry up.
I think we should come to an agreement.
You're about 10 seconds away from me blowing another hole in your head. What you think doesn't matter.
Not even if I'm the one keeping you alive. The performers here are restive, and the ringmaster is recovering from a nasty bout of green smoke and cockroaches. Traitors are so fragile.
5 seconds, Perry, and counting.
Oh.
Perry spread his hands and ducked out into the sunlight again, the shiver rippling through his linen suit as well as his skin as the sun, that great enemy of all darkness, touched him. I hope it hurts, motherfucker. A straight-backed wooden chair lay flung on the floor, soaked in rotting Hellbreed ichor. There was something odd, a long hank of dead black hair tangled up in the muck. A few moments more of examination proved it to be a wig, with a kerchief tangled in it. The kerchief had once been red and was now rotting as the acid ate at it. The wig's fake hair was stronger stuff, bubbling slightly as it was digested.
Ugh.
I glanced up. Moraeg was probably at the table when it started. Greasy antique playing cards scattered across the table. 5 of spades, ace of spades, queen of spades, all spackled with steaming liquid rot and covered in teensy roach tracks. The crystal ball shards vibrated slightly, and something lay tangled under the knife's sharp splinters. Even the base of twisted dull metal the crystal ball must have rested on was torn up, sharp, jagged edges still quivering with distress. The violence of this attack was far and away the worst. It looked like the Hellbreed had literally exploded in chunks. Even with all the sacrifice Zomba had performed at her house, the killing of her closest followers. This was superlative, which meant Mama Zomba must have had some link to Moraeg the fortune teller. Something physical. The last piece of the puzzle. Come on, something has to be here. I was about to start tearing the tent apart when a round silvery glimmer caught my eye. I crouched. Each piece of silver I wore quivered with blue light, blessing reacting with contamination.
Bingo.
I shook a piece of fabric out of my pocket. A red bandana, 51 colors like Gilberto's, left over from the last big case. I unknotted it and folded it into a mitt, used it to pick the item up. The pocket watch dangled, gunk dripping off it. Steam curled away from its steel curve. Not silver, and not gold, but still antique.
Blessed Maria, watch over us sinners now and at the hour of our death.
Words were numb on my lips, but the Hellbreed Ichor cringed, turning inert and spilled free. Belief behind words neutralizes evil. One of the oldest tricks in the book. I popped the watch open. It had stopped at 11:59, and there was no way of knowing, but I would bet it was PM. It had a plain face, with the Greek letter Omega right under the 12. The crystal wasn't cracked, and engraved on the outer edge of the front casing were three worn-down letters. SRG. Samuel R. Gregory. What does the R stand for? There wasn't much about this case that I could feel good about, but I felt good about this. Even with my coat hanging in Hellbreed muck and my heart breaking inside my ribs. Gotcha. I gotcha, you bitch. I stowed the watch in my pocket and stood, surveying the rest of the tent. A shadow fell across the flap. I whirled, hand to a gun. It was the stuttering Barker, Troy. His face was twisted up, hard red flush high on his cheekbones. His mouth was a thin line, and his hair was mussed. He held up a bottle of Barbancourt rum, no doubt Helene's. I moved my hand away from the butt of my pistol and took the bottle. He dug in his pocket, came up with a much wrinkled paper bag. Cornmeal? He nodded. I'm really gonna fuck up Helene's killer, Troy. How's Icarus? Troy's thin shoulders came up, dropped. His eyes glittered with the flat shine of the dusted, and he seemed not to notice the stink filling the tent. The red suspenders were even more hopelessly frayed, and his white shirt looked wilted.
Okay, now get out of here.
Troy's lip curled for a bare moment before turning into a thin, bloodless line again, and he retreated out into the glare. I was left holding the rumpled bag of cornmeal and a half-full bottle of Barbancourt, standing in the middle of a rotting smear of Hellbreed and staring at the shards of a crystal ball, clutching a pocket watch that ran silently with blue light under the surface of its steel casing. I set the rum on one of the few unsullied spots on the table and opened the bag of cornmeal. I was careful not to leave any gaps in the circle around me. I yanked the cup and razor out of my pocket, placed the cup on the table. The watch fit inside. I drew the straight razor out of its baggie and slid it into the cup. Blue light didn't just lurk below the surface. It cascaded over, falling in sparks. A shiver walked down my spine again. Oh, yes. I tilted the cup, watching the blue light paint the fraying velvet of the walls, and the bottle of rum trembled against the tabletop.
I've got you now, Zamba.
So much of sorcery is pure will. You don't really have to do a damn thing except declare, this is the way the world is. People do it every day. The record plays just under the surface of their conscious minds. All those assumptions they make. That's just the way it goes. Some things won't ever change. It's also the principle that lets Hellbreed, Sorrows, Middleway Adepts, and so many others slip through the cracks. People fear muggers or tax audits. They don't fear the things that crouch in the crevices, staring up with glowing eyes that don't obey human geometry. Oh, sure. People subconsciously cringe away from a full-fledged breed, or shiver when an Arceus passes close enough to touch. But they won't really look. They don't want to see. And they will hurry away if they can. Lock their car doors and forget. Whatever weird confluence of genetics and opportunity makes a hunter, one thing is paramount. The ability to look steadily at the weirdness and the filth. The refusal to look away. And add to that the stubbornness to refuse to accept that what you see has to stay the way you see it. I can't explain it any more clearly. It's the original sin, I suppose. The pride to stand toe-to-toe with God and say, no, you did something wrong. You fucked up here and it's my job to make it better. To fix it as much as I can. Maybe you're too busy. Maybe you have a great cosmic plan that accounts for all this suffering and hideousness, but I don't. I'm not you, and I'm gonna fucking do something. It's just centimeters away from the pride that Hellbreed think gives them the right to murder, rape, pillage, distort, and batter the helpless. But those centimeters count. The straight razor and pocket watch rattled in the blue enamel cup, blue sparks popping and fizzing as I held it in front of me, my right hand extended, knuckles and tendons standing up with the effort of keeping the wildly agitated metal still. I picked up the bottle, brought it to my mouth. The rum burned in my mouth. I held it, my gag reflex quivering on the edge of kicking in, the alcohol fuming until my eyes watered and spilled over. The corneal, a fine thin line of it in a circle around me, shifted. Little grains of it rose. They didn't scatter. They just lifted and plopped down again. When physical material has already been sensitized to a load of etheric energy, it's easier to pump more force through it. My arms burned. My throat was on fire. Tears rolled down my cheeks. I ignored it all. Fierce, relaxed concentration filled my skull. Cup leapt and rattled like a live thing, jerking so hard it would have dislocated my shoulder if Hellbreed strength wasn't pouring through my right fist, scorching, sliding down my wrist, pooling in my palm. I dug my heels in, concentrating. The pool of filth that used to be the fortune teller bubbled. The wig sent up curls of smoke. My blue eye narrowed, eyelid twitching madly as if it had some sort of tick. The strings under the surface of the visible snarled, ran together in a complex patterned knot. Sometimes the best way to go about it is to unpick the knot, strand by strand. Then there's other times. You just slice the goddamn thing in half and let the resulting reaction smack someone in the head.
Guess which one's my favorite?
In this space, half sideways from myself, I could see the fine dusting over every surface. An etheric imprint like the scales on a butterfly's wings. Zomba had spent energy recklessly to reach this victim. She has to be getting close to the end. Or desperate. The great hunter magics are largely sympathetic, as opposed to the controlling sorcery of, say, the Sorrows. Sympathetic magic is intensely personal. You have to know yourself before you can use it. One of the greatest dictums in hunter training. Know thyself. And of course, there are times when brute force instead of subtle knowledge is the best way to get things done. The rum was getting hotter and hotter in my mouth, and the cornmeal made a sudden wild shift. I gathered myself. The mental image solidified inside my head, seen with the unsight of my blue eye. Long blonde dreadlocks, blue eyes, a narrow waist, bony face with smallpox scars across the cheeks. Her long blue and silver caftan kilted up to her knees. Mama Zomba was crouched, looking wildly around her, fat snakes of hair writhing. She could probably tell something was gathering, but not what. The long trailing mist of rum I spit out ignited in a puff of blue flame. The cup leapt, dragging me a few inches, my heels stapling into the ground. The cornmeal popped into flame too. The smell was baking bread for just a moment, then shaded into burning starch. Potential shifted. Might became is. And the force left me in a huge, painless gout. The tent flapped wildly, straining against its moorings. Rum fire and burning cornmeal winked out. The force yanking on the blue enamel cup snapped like a rubber band. I blinked several times. Gray smoke billowed, wreathed the entire tent. The bubbling Hellbreed eye core was settled, spent of energy. There was the reek of rum and burning baked goods sliming the back of my throat. Checkmate. I wished I could lie down and sleep. There is no rest for the wicked. Or for a hunter who has just bought a little breathing room. Zamba won't be fucking with anyone at all until dark falls and the tide of magic turns. Pushed myself up on trembling hands and knees.
I wish Saul was here.
That was the wrong thought. I set my teeth and bit, choking the sob off. I pushed myself upright the rest of the way, every muscle screaming in protest.
Just a little longer, Jill. You've got a plan. Stick to it.
It was good advice, but I was oh so tired.
Get moving. Finish the job.
I bent wearily, scooping the watch and the straight razor back into the cup.
Time for the next part of the plan.
I found the ringmaster by the simple expedient of collaring a passing trader and putting a gun to the skinny, rhinestone-laden asshole's greasy head. I needn't have bothered. He just led me to the same broken-down Airstream trailer the hostage had been in before. There was a huge hole busted in the side of it, and a large black spot in the dirt where the ringmaster had bled. Get the hell out of here. Open your mouth again, and I will break every last one of your hell-trading teeth. He decided that was a good cue for an exit. I edged into the darkness, inside the ruined trailer. Perry sat in a folding chair, leaning back, elbows on the arms and fingers steepled in front of his nose. A frosty bed held a stick-thin blonde figure, collapsed against pillows and breathing softly, with a gleam of silver at its throat. The ringmaster crouched easily at the end of the bed, his thin shoulders up and his top hat askew. Frayed red velvet strained at his shoulders and hung down, his jodhpurs stretched over his bony knees. He glanced back at me, his eyes burning orange in the dimness, and his lip lifted silently. I saw the flash of the bone ridge that passed for his teeth, but he immediately turned back to the hostage, and I let it go.
Hello, darling. It has been an interesting morning.
How's Zikaros doing?
Oh, I didn't know you cared. He suddenly quieted not 10 minutes ago. The magic pulling on him slackened, and he is sleeping.
Pulling on him, huh? Now that's odd. What was the collar doing?
Sparking like all your cursed metal.
The indigo threading through Perry's whites was black in the dimness, and the scar chuckled to itself, like wet lips rubbing together.
It seemed to help, though.
I had to turn my back to him to check the hostage. And I was so tired, I only felt the slightest ripple of unease up the muscles along my spine. I just lifted one of the hostage's eyelids and checked the pupil reaction. None. The dust shine on the surface of the eyeball had turned thick and mucousy, dry and veined on the surface. His breath was shallow, his ribs rising and dropping rapidly. There was no spare flesh on him, and he wore only a pair of stained jockey shorts. His skin was mottled like a night-growing fungus. Lines of spidery writing sank into the stretched, sunken skin, twitching sluggishly with his slow pulse. The writing flinched away from my touch. My apprentice ring sparked, and the collar took on a dim foxfire glow. The biggest pocket of my trench coat flapped, as if a small animal nestled inside it.
Huh. Curiouser and curiouser.
I passed my palm down Icaros's torso, the hellish scribbles fleeing my touch. The mottling also fled a little.
Do you mind?
Actually, I really don't. Sounds like you do, though. I kept looking. I wasn't quite sure what I was looking for, but the way the cup, razor, and watch trio was shaking in my pocket was an odd sign. I glanced at the foot of the bed. The ringmaster sneered, the bone ridge's crevices grimed with something dark and dripping. Faint shadows crawled across his face, traces of poisoning from blessed silver. I stepped toward him. The scar tingled, expectant.
Jill?
Just a second, Pericles. I took another step away from Icaros toward the ringmaster. The rattling in my pocket decreased.
This can't be right. She's after the ringmaster, isn't she? It's
the only thing that makes sense.
I looked back at Icaros, who stirred restlessly. He curled up on his side, unconsciously making a lizard-like movement with his head to make the collar's spikes fold down on one side. I wondered how long he'd been doing this, to be so easy with the thing. What did he trade for?
What do you mean?
You know what I mean. What did he trade for?
None of your business!
You brought trouble to my town. There's people dead in the streets, and I've been attacked. Any question I care to ask about, any dirty laundry I take an interest in, is my business. Now, what did he trade for?
Laundry, this is excessively wearying.
The ringmaster flinched as I took another step toward him.
He traded for the same thing every hostage trades for. For peace. For getting. For an end to pain.
Why do I not believe that for a minute? He had something he didn't want to remember?
Doesn't everyone? Even our kind has regrets.
The ringmaster shifted in his seat, and I saw his feet were bare, horny, callous toes gripping like fingers. The muscle under the skin flickered in ways no human meat would move.
Not many. True. But still.
Yeah. Like you regret you didn't kill someone painfully enough? What did he trade for?
I told you. He traded to forget. And he was valued here among us.
Valued, yeah. As a way to keep the hunters off your backs? Or a way to allay suspicion? As a mascot? Don't break my heart. I've got other business to transact. The attacks won't start again until dark. And I'll be back before sunset. Perry, you keep watch. And you, Henri, clear out the big top. Before it's dark, we're gonna need the hostage in there, and people watching the entrances and exits. The rest of your people need to be outside the city limits by the time dusk hits.
You're throwing us out?
No. I'm catching your killer and finishing this up. You give me any more flack, and you're gonna be auditioning a new ringmaster instead of a new hostage. Get me?
I do not think!
Of course you don't. It's not your strength. Our little hunter doesn't wish to lose whatever advantage she has. She will keep the identity of our killer secret until the last possible moment to ensure we do not make alliance with him, and to ensure this ends the way she wishes, with the Cirque firmly under control, and myself, I suspect, neutralized. The thing is, she cannot be sure what I know. And here she is with her back to me, and her throat within reach of your claws. She must be very sure, this canny little wench, of at least one thing, that I want her alive for my own purposes.
The only thing I'm sure of right at this moment is that I'm not gonna murder you just yet, Pericles, and that I can't trust you as far as I could throw you with two broken arms. Don't flatter yourself, Perry. You're occasionally useful, but in the end, you're just one thing.
And what is that?
Just another hellspawn. Nothing should pull on the hostage before dusk, and I'll be back by then.